Open Mic Friday, or normally thought of Open Mic Friday, but we're not going to open up the mics for a little while in light of six dead and shooting rampage at Kirkwood City Council. You know that this is a big event when you're watching Fox News and they're talking all about it. But how do we respond to something like this? Especially from a law gospel perspective, because the question is going to be, how can a loving God permit such carnage and rampage? We'll talk a little bit about the actual event and then open up the phone lines. So you can call us at 505-7850, toll free 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is lawgospel@kfuo.org. But before I start, I'd like to deal with two little comments. First of all, little housekeeping. We had given a promise of sorts that in light of the questions on Muslim, we were going to be talking about that. Well, I'm actually going to do something a little better. Author of the book, Comparing the Quran and the Bible, is Rick Richter. And he has consented to be on Tuesday at 1 o'clock. That's the first hour of Law and Gospel. He'll be coming on to answer your questions. And if you have any other questions on the Muslim faith, this is an expert in this area. He's written the book, The Quran and the Bible, A Comparison. We'll tell you how you can get a copy of it, as well as use some of the questions that already have come to me. I've talked to him about a few of them, and I think he has some very good answers. So that'll be Tuesday in the first hour. Second, we received an email from my good friend, Pastor Nabil S. Noor, and he wanted me to correct something I had said. I had indicated that Jesus said it was necessary that he go to Jerusalem in order to die on the cross. And I indicated that the word was de'ai, but I misspoke. I said that was in the Hebrew language. Pastor Noor corrects me. That is in the Greek language. So thanks very much. I appreciate any corrections because we're in this all together. So let's get to the actual events. I'm sure most of you, except for those of you who may be out of this area, although it has become a national story, have learned about the fact that six have been killed in a shooting rampage at Kirkwood City Council. I don't know if you've ever gone to a city council. I've been at a number of them for one reason or another. And sometimes things can get pretty heated. In fact, it's not at all unusual on some important matter. For example, our own St. Louis Post-Dispatch, that's here in St. Louis, reported another mayor indicating that he had to call in the police once. And it was on a matter of whether or not putting a shopping center in a certain location. And the neighborhood was really up in arms against it. And the council people actually were fearing for their life. Now, in that situation, nobody was shooting anything. But this individual who has, his name is Charles Cookie Thornton. The very first words in the Post-Dispatch is that he was the town gadfly. His battles with City Hall had become almost legendary. He, in fact, had been arrested. There had been lawsuits. And it all kind of began, as you take a look at the whole picture, with him being a very nice individual, but he had an asphalt business and started parking his trucks around his house. And in a number of municipalities around the St. Louis area, you're not allowed to park trucks on the street at night. And so I guess he had been gone for a weekend and came back, and there were 3 days' worth of tickets on six or seven trucks. Now, this was over a year ago, and he began going to the city council and ranting and raving. They had to remove him a couple of times. But unfortunately, when they came to take a vote as to bar him from city council, they decided not to do that. Now, I don't know the whole story. I don't know the reasons why they didn't decide to do that. But at any rate, last night he came in and killed six people, including two policemen, as well as wounding the mayor. Now, why are we talking about this on Law and Gospel? Well, there's two reasons. The first reason is because we want to ask the question, how can a loving God do something like this? But there's another reason, and it really kind of bothered me when I read this, but it was his mother. Obviously, she knows the Bible because she said, in the Bible it says, thou shalt not kill. But then she said it was also wrong to drive someone to kill. Now, let's stop and analyze that for a moment. As far as I know, what drove, and by the way, they call him Cookie as his nickname, what drove Cookie to do this rampage was because of tickets he had received and suits that he had taken to court and lost. I had a very interesting conversation last night with a dear friend of mine as we were talking about an item that did involve the secular government to some degree. And the question was, are we always to obey the secular government? Or when we think that it is wrong, can we disobey it? What I would say to that is there's no doubt that when the secular government puts up a law that causes us to sin, then, as the apostle said in the New Testament, we obey God rather than man. But what precisely entails such going against God's law? Is it against God's law that the government would raise taxes or force health care on everyone or take away property with that particular thing called the domain where the government can come in and they're building an expressway? Are these against the will of God? They are if you can find a Bible verse that deals specifically with that issue. And since there are no Bible verses, we call this adiaphora. What is adiaphora? Adiaphora are those things that from God's point of view, from his will, it really doesn't matter one way or the other. Now, once the government, though, condones homosexual marriage, as some governments have, like in Canada, in Europe, it would be a sin for a pastor to officiate at such a marriage. And thereby, he may come under persecution and prosecution. Because, let's just take a look at here in the United States. Pastors do not do marriages as spiritual leaders. They do them as civic officers. A pastor becomes a civil officer of a particular area when he is functioning at a marriage. That's not true about a funeral. Anybody can do a funeral. But a marriage is a legal requirement, say within the state of Missouri, and there are certain requirements. For example, at one time, if you were not a resident or a citizen of the United States, you were not permitted to officiate at marriages in the state of Missouri. So that meant that if we had pastors who did not have citizenship, perhaps they were from Mexico or Canada or Europe, but they had a call here, they could not officiate at a marriage because marriages can only be officiated at by civil officers. In Michigan, I recall, when I was there, you had to be a citizen of the state as a pastor. So we could not call a pastor, say, from Ohio to do a marriage. He couldn't officiate at the legal part of the marriage. He might be able to do the sermon, some of the readings, but when it finally comes to the main statement, I now pronounce you husband and wife, that had to be a citizen of the state of Missouri, of Michigan, excuse me. It doesn't even have to be a, I don't think you even had to be a citizen of the United States. You just had to be a resident, a legal resident in the state of Michigan. So things change from place to place. And there's nothing in the Bible that goes against. But homosexual marriages, therefore, if you refuse to do it, you could be removed from doing any marriages and even prosecuted and certainly persecuted by the homosexual people there. What we're taking a look at right now is was there justification for him to do what he did? See, we don't believe there's justification for somebody to go in with a gun at an abortion clinic, and there they're actually killing human beings. Now, there was justification during World War II with Nazi concentration camps. But in that situation, all ways of changing the law had been taken care of. And so, in essence, the government itself was no longer following its own constitution. And therefore, it was appropriate to rebel against the government. Now, there can be more of a discussion on this whole abortion situation, but suffice it to say at this point that you've got to have a pretty clear Bible verse to go in and punish the government. And as far as I've been reading, in all the things that this individual Cookie was upset over, there was nothing contrary to God's law. You may not like it. I remember I had a really nice truck. It was a Dodge truck, and it was well-kept. It was painted properly, wasn't rusted or anything, and yet I was not permitted to keep it out on the street. Now, why would they do that? Well, I'm not sure all the reasons, and I'm sure there are some good reasons. You certainly don't want a neighborhood cluttered with all kinds of commercial trucks, and people can't park anywhere or this sort of thing if they're on the street. So I can understand that, but I wasn't happy at all that I either had to put it on some other location if I wasn't able to do off-street parking. But that's the laws of the land, and that's what God had put into place. So the only way you can drive someone and be properly blamed for their committing a killing is if you are totally going against the laws of God, and in a sense, they're really defending their own life. And this doesn't pass muster in any sense of the term. Now, I don't know this woman, and I don't want to continue to use her, because there may be circumstances like that. But if you've been raised in a family where somebody is consistent on this point of view, that when you are victimized in your own mind, not in the mind of God, but in your own mind, you have a right, therefore, to take revenge. Now, it's clear that people grow up with that attitude. And when you don't have a proper father and mother teaching proper values, that attitude is just going to continue. This is a natural attitude, to think that one has the right to take revenge when his way isn't received properly. And we would totally disagree with that. That's just called self-interest, selfishness, self-righteousness. It's the reason that Christ came, in order to interrupt that way of thinking in our minds, because it is totally godless. It is only selfish. But if you grow up in a household or without a household, then this revenge code is just naturally the way you think. How do I know that? Well, we've got grandchildren. And Austin is a little older than Ashley. Ashley is now able to walk around and pick up Austin's toys. Guess what happens? Does Austin say, "Oh, Ashley, I'm glad you're playing with my toy. Here, you want another one?" Not necessarily. In fact, what we had to do, excuse me, I'm laughing about this. What we had to do at Christmas was actually buy identical items for each of them so they each had their own. So we wouldn't have that problem. But you were just like that when you were a kid. By nature, we are selfish. What the family does is to help get us a proper understanding of how to live in this world where we will not have as much pain, persecution, and sorrow. Can you imagine somebody being hired at an office building, and he comes in and he has a large lunch and he takes up the whole refrigerator and everybody else's lunch hasn't got room anymore to be put in the refrigerator? Now, you see, if he says, "Well, look, I've been hired here and I get here earlier than you guys," you're going to have to beat me if you want to use this refrigerator. That's not a good attitude at all. And pretty soon people are not going to like them very much. Now, there's two ways to get kids not to act so selfishly. There's the theologian of the law way and the theologian of the cross way. The theologian of glory way, the theologian of Christ way. Or I like to say self-glory versus Christ's righteousness. By the way, we're going to talk a lot more about that on Monday, about how just believing something changes your status in God's sight. But at this point, let's get back to the point I'm making. How do unbelievers train their children in such a way that they will make sure that their children aren't being persecuted because of their selfish attitudes? You know that the only tool that they have to do that? This is ironic. It's their children's selfishness. When you work under the law, the only way you can get someone to change their outward behavior, and that's all you can do, changing outward behavior, is to show that if they do something that is inappropriate in the eyes of others, they're going to get a punishment. The consequence is going to be negative. And if they do something that people appreciate, the consequence is going to be positive. Just listen to politicians today. Whichever group they are with, they form their words in such a way that people believe that, boy, if I elect this individual, that is really going to be a great reward for me. Now, sometimes they do that because they really do believe it. That is, how many politicians used to say, boy, when I get elected, I will be pro-life. And then like the character Gebhardt in our area, as soon as he was elected, he went pro-kill children. That's why people simply don't trust a lot of politicians when they hear one thing and they see how many change their minds. I just don't understand that. I really don't. I think if I ran on a platform and I said, I'm going to lower your taxes, and then I got into a situation where it was almost impossible to lower taxes, I think I should resign rather than break my promise. But of course, politicians don't think that way. And part of the reason why really, really righteous people don't get elected is because they have to make promises to the self-interest of their listeners that they have no intention of following. And if they're really blunt with their hearers, wow. In fact, just as a politician can figure out what to say to a specific audience in order that they will think electing him will give them a reward, every audience also could be told what I'm not going to do for you. Wouldn't that be refreshing? For a politician talking to senior citizens is, number one, I will make sure that Social Security is going to be around in 2025. I will set policies up, and here are my specifics. But I am not going to promise you that I'm going to reduce the amount of cost of your drugs. Boy, wouldn't that be something if he actually said that? No, nobody ever says what they're not going to do for somebody. So the whole area of politics, the only thing an unbeliever can do in raising his or her children up properly is to show that it is in their self-interest to be decent people. And self-interest is the only motivation they have. Because there is no such thing as true love that an unbeliever has towards another person, because true love, according to God, is a total fulfillment of the law, which means not only the right action, but the proper motivation. And the only motivation that God considers as appropriate is love of Jesus Christ. And when you don't believe in Jesus Christ, then your entire motivation is definitely out of self-interest, even though you think you're doing it for the other. We human beings cannot even judge appropriately when we do something for someone else. So here's his mother. She's asked, why did your son kill these people? And in her self-interest, if she just says, well, he was just a bad son. And I think if he had been arrested and kept alive, he should have been given, you know, the death penalty. Why doesn't she say that? One reason could be is by admitting that what he did was he had no reason for it. It gives her an impression that she's going to be looked at as a bad mother. So instead of saying something that makes her look like a bad mother, she says something else that makes her look like a horrible mother. You want a mother who says to her children, by the way, if somebody comes and steals your bike, you can go and cut off his hand. What kind of nonsense is this? Now, perhaps this was done in the heat of the moment. Because in the heat of the moment is our old Adam that defends our ego and defends our family. There is no defense for this. Now, I'm sure that people are going to say, well, once they started giving him those tickets and he went to court and he kept losing and losing and losing, something snapped within him. So it really wasn't him doing this. Not from God's point of view. It was him doing this. God holds him responsible. But the big question is, why would God allow this? Why didn't God, for example, make these people at the council and the police more aware that when somebody is in this frame of mind, yelling during the council meetings, etc., that this is somebody you better be watching out for, because human beings cannot control their emotions. And so, why didn't God give that greater insight to someone so that when the policeman, for instance, outside saw him approaching, he would already be on guard? I don't know why God didn't do that. Or am I asking the wrong question? The primary question we're going to be looking at in the second half of this hour is, why would a loving God allow something like that? How can a good God allow suffering? And if you'd like to phone me on that question, don't hesitate to do so. Numbers are 505-7850, toll free 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address at lawgospel@kfuo.org. Now, I know some of you also, I had indicated I would try and answer some of your emails during this time, but I think this situation necessitates what we're doing this hour. During the second hour, if Bill and some of the others of you phone me up on your question that I have in the emails, I'll be glad to discuss it then. Or I will discuss it, and if you don't get the second hour, I'll be glad to send you a free CD of it. I'm Tom Baker. We're coming back to talk about why does God allow suffering?
Here's an AM 850 KFUO salute to our day sponsors on this Friday, February 8th, 2008, Charles and Adrian Brewster. Today's day sponsors have made a contribution to AM 850 KFUO in celebration of their 44th wedding anniversary. Once again, we say thank you to Charles and Adrian Brewster of O'Fallon, Missouri, today's AM 850 KFUO day sponsors, and our very best wishes for a happy anniversary.
This was probably the easiest big decision I'd ever made.
On the next Focus on the Family.
And the reason it was so easy was it had been made 40 years before. When I promise, I will. Till death do us part.
Robertson McWilkin talks about his love for his wife, which continued even as she succumbed to Alzheimer's. Don't miss his touching account next time on Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
This is Dr. Bill Meyer with the James Dobson Family Minute. Men need close relationships and meaningful activities, but as Dr. Dobson explains, they're not finding them where they're needed most.
Studies are showing that a large number of men are staying home from church because they feel it has nothing to offer them. But one thing can help change the courses that men are heading is an effective men's ministry in the local church. But for some reason, many churches just have little or nothing to offer in this area.
A strong men's group is one that offers common interests and goals in a non-threatening atmosphere. Men who are reluctant to talk about personal issues may be more comfortable discussing cars, football, community service projects, or just going out for buffalo wings. All of these activities can open the door to deeper relationships. For more ideas on relationship building for men, log on to family.org.
Next time on the Bible study, we'll be in Matthew 15. The scribes and Pharisees are back on the scene. Just how much are we supposed to nitpick the faith? After all, it's not an anything-goes faith, but it is possible to be too strict. Let's talk about it next time, Matthew 15, with Pastor Ron Rall of Timothy Lutheran Church. The Bible Study.
The Bible Study on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
St. Louisans know the best steaks for barbecuing are made of pork. A Ted Drew's Concrete is worth the trip. A bag of Gus's pretzels really hits the spot, and it doesn't get much better than an afternoon at the ballpark. St. Louis is unique. Local traditions define our style. Another St. Louis tradition is the exceptional Lutheran school system that's been educating our children for more than 100 years. Now that's a great tradition. Lutheran schools provide excellent and well-rounded education for kids of all ages. City, county, and Metro East locations are convenient to home and work. Come see firsthand at an area-wide open house Sunday, February 10th from 1 to 3 p.m. For a list of schools, more information, including financial assistance, visit www.metrolutheranschools.org. That's metrolutheranschools.org. Join us Sunday, February 10th from 1 to 3 p.m. See how to become part of this great St. Louis tradition.
A lot of people think the devil is complex when he tempts us. He isn't. He has a very simple formula, which he uses to tempt you, me, anybody, even the Redeemer of the world. The devil promises us something good if we will first do something bad.
Pastor Ken Klaus, this week on The Lutheran Hour.
Sundays at 12:30 and 5 p.m.
Six dead in shooting rampage at Kirkwood City Council in the first half hour of Law and Gospel. I was talking about how this individual, because of various reasons, decided to take the law in his own hands. And my point was it was always out of self-interest. Now, in between the break here, during the break, my producer Gary has come up with something I had not heard yet. This is the brother of the individual who did the killing. His name is Gerald Thornton. And he is now speaking. I want you to listen carefully as to the reasons why he said Cookie did this rampage.
I believe that he decided that no longer would he do diplomatic speaking with the people that were causing him the strife, that he had to go ahead and go to war with them and fulfill his feeling of what he needed to satisfy himself. In my belief, it was justified for him to go to war when he decided that he no longer could verbally work it out.
I can hardly believe he said that. Did you hear that last sentence? In my belief, I believe he was justified to go to war after he could not work it out. Where does this attitude come from? Or is it just in the heat of the moment? But more importantly, what Gerald said about Cookie is that he had decided no longer to be diplomatic. He had to go to war in order to what? And these are probably the three most important words: to satisfy himself. I've been in a lot of situations where I just felt there was not enough police protection. I won't give you into any details. But part of the reason is that there are, and I'm not saying this about Kirkwood. I'm just saying across the country that there is such a feeling, and we would call this a liberal point of view, about people doing bad things because of the way that they were brought up, and they should not be held accountable. I don't know. I love watching Law and Order every now and then, and I just am getting the feeling that out of the last 10 Law and Orders I saw, almost half of them, the prosecutor, who's the hero in Law and Order, lost the case because of some stupid judge saying something that couldn't be brought into evidence. Even though everybody agreed that the person was guilty, the guy walked clear because of something that had been done wrong, either by the police or the prosecution or by the court system or not getting the right warrants. When you're in that kind of a situation, you believe, and now we're talking theologically, that people are basically good. And therefore, you don't want to use appropriate force or necessary curbing of wickedness, because then you're judging people. Now, not knowing the specific circumstances here, I'm not saying anything against the police in Kirkwood or the city council. I don't know why they decided not to remove him from the room permanently, but I do know what Gerald Thornton just said. And there's a situation here with it's a little municipality that Kirkwood has a next, I understand, called Meacham Park. And a lot of those people are really upset over some of the rules now that they are under in light of this annexation. I think I'm correct on this. What happens is you can understand that. Can you imagine you're living beside your neighbor and then you buy his house and he has a rent from you, but you start changing his landscaping because you own the house. He's only a renter. Now, you have every right to do that. And he could move somewhere else, but instead he gets so mad at you that he kidnaps your daughter. Well, you did not drive him to this. He may use it as an excuse, but what you did was appropriate, was legal, was according to God's will. Now, there are circumstances, of course, where you may have done it more gently or something like that, but nothing gives a person the right to do violence against your family or yourself in these regards. This is where Jesus' dictum, you turn the other cheek, comes into play. And I think we need to understand that, but I think that was a great soundbite from Gerald Thornton, admitting that his brother said there was no longer any necessity to do diplomatic speaking. Now, this diplomatic speaking, by the way, led to his arrest and being thrown out of the city hall at one time, and he decided to go to war. And for the brother to say that now this was justification for him to do so, that's a mindset that every human being has. That's the point I'm trying to make here. We all have that mindset. If somebody drives over my driveway and drives over some of the bushes on my property, my first inclination is to get in my car and drive over their bushes. That's the way we think. Why don't I do that? Because I have been trained in two ways. By discipline, I have been trained that it is out of my self-interest to do that. And because of my faith in Jesus Christ, I forgive. Now, normally it's more because of self-interest. I just got to admit that, because I'm not a very good forgiver. I'm in fact, a poor, miserable sinner who deserves nothing but temporal and eternal punishment. I'm going to put what Gerald Thornton said, not as his usual way of thinking. I'll bet you maybe a week from now somebody's going to repeat to him, do you really believe your brother was justified? He said, no, I misspoke. This is kind of road rage that is going on right now. That people are saying things that they really don't mean to say if they just give a little bit of thought to it. That's why road rage occurs. Somebody cuts you off Now, if you went home and thought about it, and then how many of us would go out to try and find that car and cut them off again? No, it's just instant, because that's the way we are built. I got a phone call a couple of nights ago from a friend of mine who I could tell he was really going to tell me some bad news, and he began the conversation and says, "You're not going to believe this." And my immediate response back to him is, "Oh, yes, I will. I don't think you can tell me anything that's going to shock me." And maybe it's because, not that I've had a lot of experience in being shocked. I just haven't. But being a trained theologian and realizing the true nature of man is not basically good. Man is basically evil. That's why God had to come as a Savior. We're going to open up the phone line to talk to Robin in Valmire, and then I want to get to the point I want to make about why God would allow suffering. Go ahead, Robin.
Yes, thank you very much for speaking about this today. My heart is broken over this. I watched the 12 o'clock news. Evidently, you've not seen a couple of the sound bites. Well, first of all, I agree that we are all evil to the core, except by the grace of God. The mother also quoted that she believed that this was an act of God, what her son did.
No, I did not hear that.
Yes. This is on the 12 o'clock news, an act of God, like a tornado. Also, the brother quoted another different quote that said, "This is a racist issue." And I have to disagree with you. I do not believe by watching them, they're calm. They're for their son and their brother. This is a blood issue where they stick family. It feels like it gives you the, like this is a Fed thing. It was the saddest thing I have ever heard in my life. It's as, to me, as horrible as what was done.
Robin,
the attitude.
Robin, can I just interrupt you for a moment? My producer has found that particular bite you're talking about. Let's listen to it together, and then I'll let you respond.
Well, I just feel like it's an act of God, just like a storm or a tornado, because he have gone through this for so many years. They just kept giving him tickets for every little thing they could. And out of his education and knowledge and knowing the Lord, I think this was one of those things. Well, the ones that he shot, I guess, was the ones he felt like done him harm.
Boy, that's hardly believable. Is that the one you were talking about, Robin?
Yes, that is. I mean, I've seen her say it. She said it calmly. And it's like, I just got tears in my eyes. I could not. You know, and I've had an issue also in my family where someone had done something very wrong. And someone else said, "Well, this is my blood," and I said, "What? You know, this is wrong. This is a sin." And I just, this is tragic. This is just really tragic.
You know what?
I'm so thankful you're talking about this.
Okay, thank you very much, Robin. It comes to mind, now we're understanding what Jesus is talking about. It's a real problematic verse for a lot of people, but this is a great example to show what he is talking about. He who loves father and mother, and I would add son or daughter more than me, is not worthy of me. Now, I want to say two things about that verse. Number one, this is a perfect example of what Jesus is talking about. When we defend our parents or our children for doing something sinful, regardless of the reason, this is sin. It is an actual attack of God. In fact, this was so amazing that she says this is an act of God like a tornado. Tornadoes don't have minds. They don't have free wills to choose how to act out their vengeance. This individual did. He made a choice. The question is, why did God allow it? Why did he will it? Well, we'll get to that in a moment. But he who loves father or mother, mother or daughter more than me, I'm sorry, father or mother, son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Having said that, I still don't think the woman, the mother, or the brother is that different from me. The only thing I'm better trained in than obviously they are is not to say it. But as I was talking to someone else on the phone over this issue, I said, boy, I'll tell you, if I came home and there was somebody who were ransacking my house and there was my wife and maybe my daughter or son lying dead on the floor because he had killed them, and I had a gun on me, I tell you, I'm sure I'm going to use that. Whereas if I was away and heard about it, saw the man, he was arrested, and he was going to court, I would not take a gun and shoot him. This is a tragedy where people end up going into, they're just struck. What's the term, Buzz, when somebody, I'm trying to think of it, into shock? Yeah, thanks. Where people go into shock. When somebody goes into shock, they're going to say things they're going to regret. I mean, how many times have you and I not said something we regret in the heat of a moment? It is really hard not to do that. And if you haven't done it with other people around, how would you like your voice transcribed, or shall I say tape recorded, when nobody is around? Like when you're driving down the street and somebody does cut you off. I'm sure most of us don't say, oh, thank you, Jesus. No. Now, we may not swear or anything, but some of us may swear. Who knows? But the anger that can pop up so quickly, it's just really hard. And so, as I said before, there's only two ways to train an individual to stop from being this way. The one is out of self-interest, and the other is clearly out of love for Jesus Christ. The old Adam only can be stopped out of self-interest. You can't teach the old Adam how to stop doing bad things because of love for Jesus Christ. But when a person becomes a Christian, they have now another motivation. Now, I'm not going to take any more calls this hour because I want to use the rest of the time to deal with the question, how could a good God allow suffering? We may continue this a little bit in the next hour. I've got some other emails I wanted to get to, and I promised that some of you could phone on emails you sent me. But we'll just play it by ear right now. Here's the argument that you hear again and again and again. If God is God, and he's a good God, and he's really, really all-powerful, then he has to be responsible for evil. One of the things that I believe it was Jeff Gibbs at the seminary wrote an article, What Things Not to Say at a Funeral. And one of the things not to say is, this was the will of God. This was the will of God. Now, you can understand that that might be somewhat appropriate if it's a real old person who's dying of cancer, terminal, is unconscious and still in pain. Then I think it might be possible to say, well, it was the will of God that this person falls asleep at this time. But how about a little child who's killed in crossfire between gangs in a certain area? That's the will of God? You see, for us, if a good and powerful God exists, he would not allow pointless evil. But from our point of view, there is so much unjustifiable pointless evil in the world. We don't believe, at least many people, don't believe that the traditional good and powerful God exists. But there's something I said here that is part of the assumption that we made, but there's no evidence for it. I'll say it again. If a good and powerful God exists, he would not allow pointless evil. We know that a good God exists. His name is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. We know that he's powerful, but he would not allow pointless evil. Guess what? There is no pointless evil. Tucked away within the assertion that the world is filled with pointless evil is a hidden premise. Namely, that if I see evil and appears pointless to me, then it must be pointless. People, therefore, who defend evil need to make a point that it isn't pointless. And I think that's exactly what the brother and mother are doing. They are under such pressure to try and defend their son because blood is thicker than water. That means relations are thicker than our baptismal covenant together. I don't doubt that these two people are Christian. I didn't see any evidence that they aren't Christian, because Christians say these things as well as unbelievers do. And the fact that she began her conversation by saying the Bible says is against the law. But you see, for her to be able to cope with a situation, she has to say there's some point to it. And since it's her son, theologically living under the law, it's just natural for both the brother and the mother to say he was justified in what he did. And they say those words even though the rest of the world is shocked. But why are you so shocked? They are speaking as a normal, sinful human being who no longer have the ability to think clearly at this point. Now, it could be they really mean this. I can't judge their motives, and I'm not going to do that. God knows their motives. God knows as to where they're coming from right now. But it is so clear that the reason people are against the idea that God exists with all this evil in the world is that they immediately assume it's pointless evil. You know, just because you can't see or imagine a good reason why God might allow something to happen doesn't mean there can't be one. Now, maybe you're still as shocked as I was when I started here. You're saying, Pastor Baker, that God had a good reason to allow this happen? I have no idea what the reason is. But I'm dealing with a God who is in control. Let me give you this comparison. Well, let me put you into the shoes of 12 apostles, 12 disciples. Jesus is going to go to Jerusalem. One of them is real upset with him because he's not going to get rid of the Romans. The other 11 are just shocked that he gets arrested and he's going to be put to death. In fact, they don't even show up at the crucifixion. Only one was there, and that was John. And if you interviewed them that night in the Jerusalem Dispatch and asked them the question, what do you think happened today? I'll tell you the first thing they wouldn't say is that, well, God wanted this to happen. This would be so far from their mind. For them, this was pointless evil. Jesus was their three-year-long friend. They could not fathom, even though Jesus had told them ahead of time, I must go to Jerusalem to be killed and rise 3 days later. It seems like they forgot the second part. In their minds, it was just impossible that there was a point to this. Even though they had read Psalm 22, pierced in hands and feet, which begins with, my God, why have you forsaken me? Even though Isaiah 53, he was beaten, and that he was wounded for our sins. Even though God said to Eve that the Messiah, when he comes, would be wounded, but in the process crush the serpent, that is the devil. And I could go through about 100 more prophecies in the Bible. Did they forget them all? No. They were in the heat of the moment, and their faith was not grasping the promises that should have been there, that Jesus grasped when they were on the boat in the water. Remember when he was on the boat and there were storms and everything, and he just was asleep? They couldn't believe it. Woke him up. Don't you care? And he looked at them and said, oh, ye of little faith. Now, that really bothers a lot of people. Because if you're in the midst of a storm on a lake in a small boat, or even if you're on the Titanic, can you imagine some pastor coming up and saying, well, I'm going to go to sleep now. I know the ship is sinking, but oh, ye of little faith. And you would look at him and said, are you nuts? Come on, we got to get busy and try and save the women and the children and get in the lifeboats. Well, you need to understand, that when Jesus says to them, "Oh, ye of little faith," it isn't because he's saying you should believe we're going to be safe. There's no promise in the Bible anywhere that when you're on a boat and it's about to be sinking that you're going to be safe. So that's not the faith he's talking about. The faith he is talking about is the promises of the prophecies of the Old Testament that Jesus Christ, the Messiah, is certainly not going to die in the middle of the Sea of Galilee. He's going to die on a windswept hill outside of Jerusalem called the Skull. Golgotha. Oh, ye of little faith. Jesus could go to sleep because he knew it was impossible for him to die at that point. And they just weren't trusting promises. They should have all gone to sleep. There is a point to the crucifixion. In fact, how many question the creation of the world? Well, what point is that, creating the world? No, it was really a wonderful creation. The cross began the recreation. And in that recreation, you have been saved. Evil and suffering, in a sense, are not really reasons for not believing in God. Evil and suffering is a way that proves God's existence. What? What do you mean by that? Even the incident that happened in beloved Kirkwood, Missouri, last night. I'm Tom Baker. We're kind of moving away to a degree today, the Ask the Pastor, in light of this horrible shooting that has reverberated around the country, by the way. You know, you often see situations where people are put to death in other cities and doesn't mean much, but boy, when you see it on your own news and then you go to the national news and it's also headlined. So when we get back from the break, I know some of you are trying to call in. We will take some calls, and we'll talk. Well, I'll tell you what we'll begin with, because I want to explain a little bit more how evil and suffering, I'll start off with that, is actually a way of evidence for God. In the meantime, we ask you to keep in your prayers the survivors and the whole city of Kirkwood and the surrounding area, so that through worship, particularly on Sunday morning, they may hear a little bit about law and gospel, which is the only thing that can comfort in this time. I'm Tom Baker. Thanks so much for listening. Stay with us through the break. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Listen to Law and Gospel with Tom Baker, Monday through Friday at 1:05 p.m. on AM 850 KFUO. You can write Pastor Tom at AM 850 KFUO, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or at this email address, lawgospel@lawgospel.com.